When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome to another edition of the Baseball America podcast. I'm J.J. Cooper, joined by John Manuel. And celebrate. This isn't the top 100 podcast, but
not
we're
yet.
Close.
Not yet.
This is the top 100 podcast preview.
That's kind of what it is.
We're going to talk top 100 prospects, but we're not going to give out. The top 100 does not come out until Tuesday, February 21st. So we're not going to talk about the actual players where they are on the top 100, but we're going to talk about kind of how we put together top 100, what all goes into it. And also, we're going to look back at the 2007 Top 100. It's been 5 years. We can kind of make some judgments on that. Where did we go right? Where did we go wrong? So we're going to talk about that today. So hopefully you'll enjoy the next, let's be honest here, 45 minutes or so. And we do. Before we jump in, though, we do want to remind you that it's book season. Spring training is just starting, but it's also book season. If you got a fantasy league, if you're in an app, a strat, a pursue the pennant, whatever fantasy baseball game you play, you need the prospect handbook. If you just like prospects, you need the prospect handbook. We've also got the directory coming out, which will have all the schedules, all the names, all the numbers that you want. And we have the super register, which is still, there's nothing like it. It's the book that has the career stats for everyone in the minors, but not just stats, also all their transactions. You can find out how they got there, why they're there, for everyone who's in affiliated baseball right now. So if you want any of those, just go to baseballamerica.com/store. We'll set you right up. And again, just the reminder, prospect handbook season right now. If you aren't reading the prospect handbook and you're in a fantasy league, I promise you someone in your league is.
Yeah, there's lots of fantasy information out there. And there's lots of prospect information out there, but let's face it, nobody really starts ranking prospects until they read us.
But more than that, even it's 30 prospects per team.
The depth
with scouting reports.
The depth of information is. I mean, there are lots of competitors and a lot of people who work hard at it and do a good job at it. But I'm very confident the prospect handbook is the best book of its kind. I don't think it's close, and I'm very proud of the book, and we are as well. And we're proud of the Top 100 we do every year, JJ. We've been doing Top 100s of Baseball America since you and I were in high school. The first one had Steve Avery as the number one. He was the first number one prospect. And to be honest with you, I'm pretty proud of that even. I mean, Steve Avery went on to be as good of a pitcher as there was in baseball in the early 80s. The
nice.
Early 90s, thank you. I'm not that old. But when the Atlanta Braves needed a win in the early 1990s, Steve Avery was the one who went out and got it.
Sometimes, because Smoltz
they had others. But
yeah.
Smoltz was good.
Yeah.
Avery was better in the postseason back then. Was he not the LCS MVP in back-to-back years? He was just money in the postseason. This was before he had a division series. And Steve Avery was basically a left-handed power arm. The next time we tried a high school left-handed power arm, it didn't work out with Brian Taylor. Really, Brian Taylor, you look in the history of prospects, he's one of the biggest busts. I think if you're looking at the history all time of prospects, it's probably him. I mean, I don't remember him ever being on the cover of Sports Illustrated. So Clint Hurdle, I think, is up there.
But
Brian Taylor had more hype.
He is our, if you look at the Baseball America, the history of the top 100, he is the biggest number one bust, and it's not close.
Yeah, I would say the worst ranking we've ever had. Even though Ruben Rivera was pretty bad, to me it's either Brian Taylor, Ruben Rivera, or Andujar Cedeño, who was number two on a list 1 year. And as Ben Badler chronicled in an article last year, we would never do Andujar Cedeño number two now because his strikeout to walk was brutal. His error total brutal. Basically, we just went gaga in 1991 or 92 for a shortstop with power. And it wasn't even we really didn't consider anything else.
The best way to put it is we do feel like that
we weren't there for the meeting, but that's
we do
what it
feel
like
that the process has, you know, it gets better and better.
And that's where I'm going is that's when we started, and I think the product and obviously the product and the process were good enough that the list gained traction and Baseball America gained traction. Because, again,
let's put it this way, 1995, three of the top four are Hall of Famers.
Yeah, that's a pretty good list. So I think that what we want to try to talk about a little bit in today's show, not just the process.
Hall of Famers, I should say.
Right, good point. Not just the process, but just kind of how it's evolved. And even, and JJ, I think it's important to kind of have you involved in this because even in 2007, I don't know how involved you were
I was a little bit involved, but not nearly the level of now.
Right, and
it's a long internship process.
I don't think I got to do my first top 100 prospect list until like 2004. I'd worked here for 8 years.
That's about my timetable. I joined in 2002. I think the 2010 was my first top 100.
You gotta earn the right to contribute to the top 100. And the thing is, everyone does contribute because everyone does reports on these players, and everyone contributes to the vault of information that we have. And then the best part of it is. You know, everyone has a different way of interpreting that information. You know, take Dellin Betances as a good player. He's a risky player. I like him better than most, mm-hmm. probably because I do the Yankees list, but I do think that I always go back to, like, Bobby Witt. Bobby Witt was a starting pitcher who really didn't have the command to be a starter, but he had filthy stuff. And so every year, basically, Bobby Witt would have an ERA above the league average, but he kept on going out there because the stuff was so tantalizing. And then even though he walked a ton of guys, he also struck out a lot of guys and had these flashes of brilliance.
I'm undercutting. It's a good comp, but I'll say this.
I'm undercutting.
You're making me go like Dellin Betances less. Because,
but you know what? But Bobby Witt was a big league starter for like 7 to 10 years, and a couple of those years were above average.
Right.
So,
but,
and then A.J. Burnett's another example, the same genre. And I think
A.J. Burnett, though,
is
better than Bobby Witt.
He's better than Bobby Witt. Not by a ton, but he's better than Bobby Witt, and I think that Dellin Betances his floor is Bobby Witt. You know, if he's a starter, I think he'll be that.
I think
so much of that depends on what organization he's in. You know, and the New York Yankees look at him as a starter because he has that flashes of 2 to 3+ pitches, and he's got a changeup. It was much better in 2010 than it was in 2011. But he has had a changeup that's been a plus pitch for him, not just an okay pitch, not just a show-me changeup. So, again, he's a very volatile player. My level of confidence in him is not as high this year as it was last year. But Jim just dismisses him as a reliever. I understand that, but, I mean, like, we have a very – so everyone on the staff has players where they have wide disparities of opinion.
And the thing that jumps out is that this is – I mean, there's all these jokes about, you know, this is formed by committee and all. Our top 100 is formed by committee, and – that's, to me, one of the strengths of our top 100.
Right.
Is there, every single one of us who's involved in that meeting has players who we are higher on than everyone else. I am the Mike Montgomery guy.
Right.
I mean, there are guys that you're going to root for. I'm going to root for Mike Montgomery because if Mike Montgomery turns out, I was right. If he falls on his face, I was wrong.
He's not your Nick Blackburn, but he's close. So, yeah.
Right. I mean, it's something where, but when we go into the top 100, Mike Montgomery's not going to rank as high as maybe I would rank Mike Montgomery because everyone else is maybe a little more skeptical on him. Dellin Betances is not going to rank as high as you would put Dellin Betances because others are more skeptical of him.
Like, I'll always remember a couple of years ago when he was in short season ball, Aroldis Vizcaíno was on no one's top 150 except for Ben Badler's. Ben Badler had him pretty high. Now, Vizcaíno's there now. I don't think he deserved to be there when he was coming out of short season ball because of his arm issues, and we've seen that. And I think the fact that he's even in the top 100 now, despite the fact that he's going to be a reliever more than likely, I think it does tell you just how special his stuff is. I would never, for me, rank a guy who's in short season ball and who I think is going to be a future reliever in the top 100 prospects. But we would have really been ahead of the game if we had ranked Aroldis Vizcaíno at that time. We'd probably also have prospect fatigue. So there's different ways to look at these things.
The best way to put it is, he didn't just have him in.
He had him really high.
Right.
And I'm going back to your point of that one person being really high on a player doesn't skew the top 150 because the consensus approach, I think, really leads to balancing that out.
Because basically, to describe a little bit kind of the detail of how we do it, we have multiple people sit down and do a top 150. So we all submit our top 150s. Jim Callis takes that top 150. I think there was 7 150s this year.
I think that's correct.
So takes those 7 top 150s, puts them in a spreadsheet. and then averages them out. So then we get kind of the output, which is essentially our, it's not our top 210, but roughly something like that.
Close to that.
Of here's 210 guys ranked by points. So like if you were one number one, you get 150 points.
Right.
You know, and you average
Thank
that out.
Thank goodness for spreadsheets.
Yeah, you average that out. So if a guy, you know, if one guy is one on six of the seven, he would essentially just under having the maximum 150 points.
Right.
So you do it that way, and you do it all the way down. Well, then we all get together, sit down, and go through a meeting. And what we do is we essentially accept that that's the general order. But then we go, okay, wait a second. Now let's look at guys.
Let's address some inconsistencies. If everybody took, you know, for example, the Royals. You mentioned like Mike Montgomery. You were higher on Mike Montgomery. Well, if other Royals had, if Bubba Starling, for example, was ahead of Montgomery, we'll talk about that. So there's a lot of those that come out, not a lot, but a few of those that come up.
Oh, also,
draft rankings, that kind of
stuff. We'll look at a guy and say, now, wait a second. So this guy was a 2011 draftee, as was these other guys.
Right.
None of them have, you know, we won't get into too much deep, but I'll say it. Like Taylor Youngman, they came up in discussion of that.
Taylor Youngman and Corey Spangenberg were the two guys that jumped
because
to my mind.
Basically, we brought up, it's like, okay, like with Corey Spangenberg, we don't want to go too crazy because, yes, he got to play last year and he had a good season.
Yeah, I think he had an outstanding debut. He basically did the things that he was as advertised.
Right. So that definitely gives him a bump. But then you want to, when you get in that meeting, you want to sit down and say, okay, wait a second. But we don't want to go too crazy on this.
Right.
Because just because he got to play and almost every other one of these draftees didn't.
Right. He ranked 33rd, I think, in our draft top 200. So do you really think that much? He would. But Taylor Youngman ranked 8th. Now, there shouldn't have been a 25-player gap probably between those two guys. You do have college pitcher versus JUCO infielder, where it's not 100% sure he'll stay at second, might be a center fielder. So, but at the same time, those players are a lot closer together than that. That's a great example. And like Youngman does not rank 8th, I don't think, among college pitchers, you know, among all of our players from the 2011 draft class. He didn't, but when we ranked him, it was middle of May, he hadn't lost. He lost his last three starts, if memory serves, for the Texas Longhorns. But he didn't sign until August. He didn't pitch as a professional, I don't believe yet. He hasn't made his pro debut. No. If he did, it wasn't significant. We don't have reports like, say, we do of Archie Bradley, who was insane in instructional league. I know it's instructional league, but the reports on his stuff were otherworldly. I have a hard time.
The reports on Archie Bradley were one of those things where a team drafts a guy really liking him, they bring him in, and then less than 4 months after they draft him, like, we got better guy than we thought.
Exactly, and that's really how it sounds for Archie Bradley. The reports on him are so strong. He was tough to rank at the top 100, to be honest, but he was really tough to rank.
Because the thing about it is one of the things that we try to do with this is that no one piece of information. We don't want to go crazy over one thing in any direction.
Yeah, you don't want to be too reactionary.
Right. So one of the things with that is. You don't want the rankings to change that much from what our draft rankings were for guys for 2011 draftees because we don't, in the majority of cases, have that much more information.
Correct. There's a little bit of information.
There's more information.
How much credit do you really want to give Sonny Gray's 30 pro innings and the fact that he got the double A for a couple of starts? Was it like three, four starts?
Do you want to?
I mean, that's good. And
do you want to basically worry about Trevor Bauer, who also made a double A and then had a bad couple of outings?
Exactly.
It's a bad outing.
It's the definition of small sample size. It matters some. Again, it matters that Spangenberg came out and was what we thought he was. We can crown him because he was who we thought he was.
And by the way, one of the things I'm looking forward to, and I think if you love minor league baseball, you have to look forward to this. This is done. We don't have to deal with the stupidity.
It is.
The stupidity of what MLB's done with this, where, no, if you're going to get money, you can't play your first year.
Hallelujah. I believe July 13th is the deadline now.
Now, let's be honest. A lot of these pitchers, they're not going to get a whole lot of action.
A month off, a lot of these guys are going to take that time off. But I do think a month off, then you maybe take 3 or 4 weeks to ramp back up if you want to.
And you're going
to
limit their innings.
And then
you're
measured in August. You limit, exactly. I like that idea.
And in position players, those guys are going to go out, and we're going to get to see 200 at-bats.
Especially the high school guys.
To put it this way. We're going to talk about the 2007 top 100 in a little while. Not yet, but a little while. But Evan Longoria back in the old system.
That's right, 2006.
Evan Longoria in 2006 had already changed entirely his prospect status.
He'd gone from very good to stupendous, and he hit 20 home runs in half a season, 18 in the regular season and 2 in the postseason.
Another way to
signing.
Put it is Tim Lincecum in 2006. That, another guy who Tim Lincecum basically rocketed. And that's what you don't get to see that anymore.
We had Lincecum 11. I think that was funny. I mean, it actually makes sense. I know I'm jumping the gun a little bit looking at that, but we had Longoria at number 3, I'm pretty sure, on our draft list in 2006. I'm pretty sure it was 1. He may have been 4. I know 1 was Andrew Miller, and I know that 2 was Tim Lincecum. 3 and 4 were Brad Lincoln and Evan Longoria. But when that came out, and that 2007 Top 100 came out, Longoria was the top. Longoria ranked first among 2006 draftees, followed by Miller and Lincecum. That also ties in, JJ, to this year's Top 100 because it's hitter versus pitcher. And, you know, that's one of the features that we'll have in the upcoming issue of the Top 100. Jim Callis.
It'll go, go online feature.
Yeah.
With the Top 100 when we go out on Tuesday.
And so that'll be
up Tuesday.
You'll see the countdown is on at baseballamerica.com, the countdown clock. We like the countdown clock. We like using it for the draft. We like using it for the draft signing deadline. Now we're using it for the Top 100, which is cool. That clock is also counting down to Jim's feature, where he basically talked to, and this is no secret, of the 3 top prospects. Who do you have number 1? Is it Bryce Harper? Matt Moore? Is it Mike Trout? And what we did was instead of...
Yeah. We're not giving away much here to let you know. One of those guys will be number 1.
We already put that question to ourselves. You'll find out what our answer is on Tuesday. But you'll also find out what the industry's answer is, because Jim polled like 20 front office executives about that question. So, and has their reaction, their quotes, their comparisons of these players, that kind of stuff. So pretty neat feature, and something we've done in the past, JJ. We did not do that, I don't believe, in 2007. I don't even know that list is, it was not as clear-cut. But I would say, in retrospect, Evan Longoria probably should have been our number 1, if not Tim Lincecum. It would either be Longoria, Lincecum, or Tulo.
If you're doing it now, Longoria was number 7, Lincecum was 11, Troy Tulowitzki was 15. I would say that those 3 are the guys that, you know, if you were doing the retroactively, one of those guys is number 1. And that's tough. I don't know which one of those guys you'd say is number 1. I would quite happy to build a team around any one of the 3.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I can't.
I mean, I would argue in some ways Lincecum, from the standpoint of...
He's had a little bit more success, probably.
Multiple Cy Young win awards.
Yeah, and a World Series.
And it's also, as hard as it is to find a Tulo or a Longoria, that front, a true number 1.
Yeah, true number 1 on a World Championship team is hard to come by. Clayton Kershaw also down at 24. And I still think that's a pretty aggressive ranking for a high school pitcher who had not pitched yet outside of, like, rookie ball. That Clayton Kershaw was number 24.
I'll credit to that. That was Alan Matthews over that.
He did
Alan
love
Matthews
Clayton
loved
Kershaw.
Clayton Kershaw. Now a scout, but
that's right. And a past host of the podcast, as we were listening to past podcasts today. There's not a lot of the thing from the 2007 one.
By the way, another guy you could throw in that would be in that top 10 now. Ryan Braun, number 26.
Yes, Ryan Braun, pretty good. But I mean, that's all that just.
Again,
we don't know what to make of Ryan Braun with his offseason and the PED accusation. But that was the first year that we did our risk factors, which is fun to look back on. Power development, risk factor for Ryan Sweeney. Best case, Garrett Anderson. Worst case, Sean Burroughs. Back-to-back one home run years, you're Sean Burroughs.
Right. The interesting thing is this case. So we did this. This was the first time we've done it. We've done it since. But we looked at risk factors, guys who are risky.
Right.
Now, I'll just run through these real quick, and then we'll go back and investigate more. But
yeah.
First guy we pulled out was Brandon Wood, who was ranked number 8. He was risky because of strikeouts. The answer is, was best case Troy Glass, worst case Chad Hermanson. He became Chad Hermanson.
And the thing is, JJ, in retrospect, Troy Glass, I'll say it again, I said it off air, I'll say it on air. Troy Glass was a tough comp to throw on him at that time because he's not Troy Glass physically. He's just not as big and strong.
No.
And I remember thinking...
Troy Glass was a freak because Troy Glass could play shortstop as... a monstrous human.
Yeah, not well. Brandon Wood was certainly better at shortstop than him, but I mean, I remember thinking that was not there wasn't a perfect comparison, a successful Brandon Wood comparison, and that troubled me at the time.
Franklin Morales, number 30, we pulled out as a risk factor because of his control, his walks. Best case was CC Sabathia. Worst case was Matt Riley. A lot closer to Matt Riley than CC Sabathia.
Had a nice peak. He was at a really big-time power arm for a pennant-winning team in 2007. But since then, below downhill.
Risk factor, James Loney, power. Best case, John Olerud. Worst case, Travis Lee.
Travis Lee.
Much closer to Travis Lee.
Absolutely.
And really, if you said, why is James Loney not better? It's his lack of power.
Yeah, absolutely.
You just talked about Ryan Sweeney was number 55 on that list.
The next one's my favorite one, because Elvis Andrews at that time was in low class A, kept head above water in low class A at age 17, has offensive potential to go with his plus defense and speed. So our best case, Edgar Renteria, our worst case, Luis Rivas. He's a lot closer to Edgar Renteria.
Absolutely.
I mean, I know he has a hit for power as a professional.
But you also have to remember, the thing that jumps out is he was
17.
He was 17 when they were doing this ranking. He's still very young.
Yeah, absolutely.
His best baseball is still ahead of him.
And just signed a big contract extension. And no one says that Elvis Andrews is a superstar. Just like Edgar Renteria was never a superstar. But he's going to be an above-average shortstop for a long time, and there's a lot of value to that.
Our next one was Drew Stubbs, number 88 on the list. Hit tool. Wonder about the hit, strikeout a lot. Best case was Mike Cameron, worst case was Keith Reed. I'd say closer to Mike Cameron, but the thing about it is that that still is. He struck out a record amount of times last year.
Yeah, yeah.
That's been the problem for him.
But unlike Keith Reed, he still makes, and he does enough when he makes contact he's an effective big leaguer.
The thing that he has, and it's the Mike Cameron, what he has is what Mike Cameron had. Gold glove defense
combined
with power.
Right.
So put those two things together.
Reed had power, but not the gold glove defense.
And then the one that made us realize, this is worth doing. Number 91, Will Inman, short right-hander. Best case was Joel Pinheiro. Worst case was Tim Redding. And actually, he's been worse than the worst case in that case.
He has been. We thought, basically when we did this, we've never had a six-foot right-hander without premium stuff has never made the top 100 previously. The closest
and when we got done doing this risk factor, we really wish we could have done it over at the time and say, you know what, maybe Will Inman shouldn't be on this list.
I think what happened was that we did the top 100 before, we put it online before it went to press, so it was already out there, so we had to.
That was a mistake.
We had to keep it in there. It was a mistake. That's why the top 100 comes out a little bit later, probably. But I mean, the guys that we ranked after him.
By the way, speaking of.
By the way, Dylan Betances was
number
100 that year. That's hilarious.
Still in the list.
Still on the list, not making the list, but still eligible, is number 94, Chris Parmalee. Colin Ballester still probably has the same mustache he had in 2006. Not quite. I know the Bally star changes it up
But the thing that jumps out is when you talk about one of the things to remember with the top 100 in general, no matter our top 100, anyone's top 100, a lot of these guys are going to fail. And the thing that jumps out is that the riskier a guy is, now, you may get an Elvis Andrus, comes together, but there's also a lot of Will Inmans out there.
There are, absolutely. Absolutely.
And the thing that jumps out is that when we're doing this with Will Inman was, and I don't think we have ranked anyone a Will Inman type, has not made the top 100 since then.
No, Will Inman essentially was an overreaction by us to, hey, stats really matter in the minor leagues. You know, he had such big stats. We felt we could not ignore him and put him on the top 100, and he really didn't deserve to be there, and that's nothing personal. Good luck to Will Inman.
But that's a good reminder, though, because we get this question all the time.
Yeah.
All the time, which is, player X has dominated this league. Why don't you rank him higher, or why didn't you rank him? And the reality of it is especially when it comes to pitchers, if you want to throw out to me 50 guys who put up great numbers in A-ball without stuff, without plus stuff, I'll let you have all 50 of them.
You got it.
And I'm not saying that you may not find one guy who it works out with, but I promise you this, for every one guy who makes it,
you've got 99.
Yeah, I'll take, I can find you, again, not trying to pick on anyone, I always think of, like, especially the reliever, if you got us the old Super Register, look up Todd Pennington's numbers. That's the guy who always jumps out
nice.
To me. Because Todd Pennington, you could not have
You can't have better numbers than Todd Pennington.
You could not have a better number than what he had.
I want to find Todd Pennington's numbers.
Since
our computer is so ancient that we don't have
pull out an Indians media guide from there's the Indians media guide.
I think he might still be in this one right here.
But then Todd Pennington was a trick pitch guy.
And the funny thing to me is that his name was Pennington, because it always makes me think of who was a left – Brad Pennington. Mm-hmm. There have been three Penningtons. You got Todd, you got Brad, and you have the actual good one, Cliff, the shortstop. But Pennington, is he still in here? Nope, just Cliff Pennington. I have to find an older super
register. Just grab a media guy.
Oh, yeah, the media guys are right here.
But the thing with that is that, numbers, when you get to double A, when it comes to a pitcher, matter a lot.
Honestly, the guy that I actually think of for crazy minor league numbers is Jeremy Reed. Because that even in double A, he was so good in the minor leagues. And he had college pedigree, too.
But he was a profile tweener.
He was a tweener. That's it. The profile, the power was not there for center field.
And he couldn't really play center field.
For corner, right. And he couldn't really, and he wasn't a good enough center fielder.
Because if he could have done either of the things, if he had more power or if he'd have been a true center fielder,
yeah.
I think he could have really been something pretty interesting.
But. Todd Pennington, yeah. His 2003 year in Lake County was the one. 37 innings, 14 hits allowed, 17 walks, 65 strikeouts, and only 3 earned runs allowed.
He threw a palm ball. And
trick pitch joker.
Class A hitters could not hit it. But the problem is that you get up to higher levels and it doesn't do the same thing.
I believe, as they said in Intolerable Cruelty, he's exposed.
But what was and again, this is not railing because we're not saying stats aren't somewhat important. But
they certainly are.
But you have to pair that. It's a blend.
Right.
Who is the Mets guy?
Yusmeiro Petit.
Right. Who put up great strikeout numbers.
He was a tough one.
But he did it with, again... And I'll admit, I'm somewhat of a velocity snob. I've become more and more of a velocity snob.
I think that is very reasonable.
Which is, if the words come to you that you are not, 91, 92 sitting, if you're a pitcher, especially if you're a right-hander, and the words 88 to 91, touching 92 come out, I'm gonna start at a skeptical level.
Yeah, you better. And we're looking at you, Corey Burns. We're saying Boo Earns. I mean, Corey Burns is the ultimate example of what you're talking about. He's a modern day Todd Pennington, minor league pitcher, puts up sick numbers, reliever who's 87, 88, always kind of has been, and has crazy arm slots and all this stuff.
And the thing that that jumps out to me about that is that you'll. Yes, you can think of examples of big leaguers
Chad
who succeed
Bradford.
With that. But
those are trick pitch guys, basically. A submarine guy is essentially a trick pitch guy.
And the thing about it is what you need to find with that is okay, did they manage to do it at double A, triple A? That's one step. And the other thing is that, okay, there's a difference between starters and relievers. To me, the starters who succeed at the big league level without plus stuff are the guys who do it, who they had – at least average stuff when they hit the big leagues,
right.
And then they lose some of it.
Right, you're Jamie Moyers, those kind of guys. Like, and obviously a left-hander, too. It's funny because Todd Pennington, apparently, a little minor league history here for you, JJ. Todd Pennington, he had this great year. I don't know if he got hurt, but he was still quite good in 2004 at Kinston. 2005, Kinston and Akron, ERAs kept on climbing up there. And then he's just gone. He's not in the 2000.
He was an indie baller.
He must have been released in spring training of 07, or of 06, I should say, because he's not in the 07 Super Register.
And he was an indie baller.
So Todd Pennington, a lesson learned for J.J. Cooper. Not that you were ever really on.
No, I was going to say, I remember writing about him, though, and the Indians, I'll say this, they were very much like, hey, we'll just have to see. Got to prove it at every level. And he didn't.
But he did not prove it. He did prove it. He proved that he wasn't as good as his numbers.
But so going back to the top 100, just looking at it, let's go back to the top 20 again for a minute.
So
number one was Daisuke Matsuzaka.
Lesson learned. Yu Darvish, not number one this year. Still pretty high. I know they're not directly analogous.
Number two is, to me, a guy who still ranks as one of the more puzzling guys in recent history, which is Alex Gordon.
Numbers two through six are all puzzlers because they flashed it, but there hasn't been consistency.
Delmon Young,
yeah.
Philip Hughes, Homer Bailey, Cameron Maven, Evan Longoria is number seven.
But Longoria
is the one where you go, okay, no, that worked out very well.
But, you know, so...
Let's just, like, Gordon... In Gordon's case, I don't know what... Because...
He figured it out last year.
And he figured it out. He was very good as a rookie. It's there was this intervening period of time where he backtracked. But with Gordon, I would still say right now, it's like, okay, he maybe not be... You wouldn't be number two if you did this again?
He'd still be in your top 20, probably. I mean,
he... Or top, you know... If you did this right now, he probably wouldn't be, but I could still see him when it's all said and done, being a top 20 guy.
I don't think 2011 was a peak for him. I expect him to be at that level for a few years. I think Alex Gordon finally figured it out. At the same time, he's not a third baseman anymore. He's a left fielder, and it's a shame that that's what it took basically to unlock his bat. Mm-hmm. But I like Alex Gordon. I'm not saying he's as good as Roy Halladay. I like that he went back to the minor leagues. Was humble, didn't complain, learned the new position, came back and became a better player.
And became their best player.
Right. And then Delmon Young at three. Well, that, I mean, we know what the issue has been there. He just has never controlled the strike zone. That said, his 2010 season was a really good year. I think he had a 120 ops plus, which is basically what Alex Gordon did last year that we're kind of praising Alex Gordon for.
The difference
Delmon
also,
Young's done it just as many times. Delmon Young was league average before that. So he's actually, I think, been a better big leaguer than Alex
Gordon. The difference being, though, is that one thing that always hurts Delmon is that he's never been as good defensively as really he should be.
He's terrible on defense.
And he should. And the thing about it is he shouldn't be.
He shouldn't be terrible. He was an asset defensively as a minor leaguer. I don't know why he's been so bad defensively in pro ball in the big league because he was not. He wasn't Lonnie Smith in the minor leagues.
And now
we
would
have written about it, and now he is. And he's like a slow Lonnie Smith defensively.
Right. Well, that's the thing. If you want to say with Delmon Young, beyond everything else, one of the things is he's not the athlete that he was. Some of that athleticism is not there like it was when he was coming up.
It's strange that he seems to have lost some athleticism. And the thing is his body changes, it seems like, every year. One year he's Fat Delmon, one year he's Thin Delmon, and his better year was 2010 when he was more Thin Delmon. So I still think that Delmon Young can be he's a productive big leaguer, but I don't think he's ever going to be a star. I think it's more likely that Alex Gordon will be a star than Delmon Young going forward. I think it's more likely that Phil Hughes can still be a star going forward. His peak is probably higher than these other two guys. He had an 18-win year in the big leagues where he was pretty good, like a number 2/3 starter on a Yankee team.
I do wonder with Phil Hughes if he wasn't a Yankee, if he was an Astro. Or a Dodger, or take your pick. If he was with a team where basically said, here's the ball, we need 34. Give us 34 starts, come back again, do it next year.
Well, that is the big question. Could he ever give you 34
and
starts?
I don't know if he could.
That's the big question. And the same thing with Homer Bailey right behind him at 5.
And it's a reminder again. You know, it's not that there's not pitching prospects, because we got, you know, Tim Lincecum on here.
Right.
They are riskier.
No doubt.
We're going to keep ranking, though, for one of the main reasons is that our top 100 is not just – it's part of it is looking, okay, ideally we want our top 100, if you look back at it 20 years later, that the best player of the prospect class is number one, the second best is number two, the third best is number three, all that.
And again, if we didn't rank high school pitchers, JJ, we wouldn't have had Clayton Kershaw at 24 the first year he was drafted.
But at the same time, it also incorporates – it's a snapshot of here is what we believe the industry, which let's make it clear, there is no unanimity of opinion when it comes to the industry. But here is, after talking to a lot of people, here's what we feel like the industry, how they value it. Which what we're trying to say is yes, in hindsight, would you rather have Tim Lincecum than Homer Bailey or Phillip Hughes? Absolutely. At that moment in time, if the Giants had offered the Yankees, we'll give you Lincecum for Phil Hughes, the answer would have been no.
Absolutely. Yep.
A year later, they would have been yes. But.
And Giovanni Gallardo was another good example. He was at 16 that year, and that's one where we had pedigree. We also had performance. He led the minor leagues in strikeouts the year before, was third in ERA, and jumped up to number 16. So and the track record of the pitchers in the top 10 isn't as good as it is in the 11 in the second 10. But Cameron Maybin at 6, we finally saw the flashes last year, JJ. But you know that Midwest League season by Justin Upton had been so he left us wanting in 2006 in his pro debut. So we actually had flipped him and Maybin, who've always been linked in my
and
head.
And that was like maybe an example of a little bit too much on a limited. We always had believed before that Justin Upton was the better prospect.
Right, absolutely. When they were amateurs, it was plain to us. We like Cameron Maben. We like Justin Upton that much more. And we should not have let, you know, similar performances in the Midwest League, although Maben was better.
Maben was better. And the
Actually,
thing
I guess
with
Maben
Upton
was in, I forget where Maben
Upton,
was.
The knocks on Upton were that Upton did not seem like he was that
engaged
on a nightly basis. Didn't run everything out,
That's
all those
it.
Kind of things.
That's it. It's like we decided to take it out on Justin Upton.
Which the funny thing is that we didn't take it out on Delmon Young, who was, when it came to makeup questions, was much worse that year.
Yeah, took the Albert Bell comparisons too far when he tossed the bat at an umpire, but he could rake. Well, not really. That's the problem. He just hits fine. It's the Baseball America podcast with John Manuel and J.J. Cooper. J.J., we actually have a couple of Twitter questions for this year's Top 100. I thought we'd get to bring him back to this year's Top 100. Taijuan Walker, we're talking about high school pitchers and kind of some of these guys who could make the leap or made the leap in the past. Taijuan Walker, top five prospect next year? And what kind of season, what do you see him being at his peak? I think he's a top five caliber prospect in terms of talent.
He could. I mean, he's a high risk, high reward. And I don't mean like he's not high risk to the level. There's some other guys that I can think of. Like a Luis Heredia is a high risk, high reward.
He's high risk. He's a high school, he's a young pitcher. And he hasn't been out of A ball. That automatically makes you high risk.
That being said, the athleticism, the pitches, the stuff. Yeah, I mean, there was a reason that Connor was getting Dwight Gooden comps.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, that was something along those lines. Along those lines, sorry, I don't have it with me, but we got a Twitter question asking, hey, with the Blue Jays, could you see them really moving up next year in the org rankings?
Absolutely.
Because they've got some, and that was the thing that jumped out to me I think this Blue Jays team, this Blue Jays organization right now, in many ways, is where the Royals were farm system-wise.
Yeah.
We go back now 3 seasons ago.
Like 2009?
Right.
Yeah.
The year before, 2010, they had the year that,
their prospects had really good years.
Right. We don't know that the Blue Jays prospects are going to do that, but they have the building blocks there where if all the Blue Jays prospects, or most of them, have big years this year, they're going to be number one next year because I think they would be number one because they have so many guys in A ball.
Right. Or short season
who this year you could turn around and go, wow, that guy had a monster season and made it to Double A. That guy rocketed to High A.
You could really see them having, if all those pitchers who probably are going to go to Lansing, like Justin Nicolino, Aaron Sanchez, Noah Syndergaard, if all those guys, Daniel Norris, if all these guys go to Lansing and light up the Midwest League, and if some of them go advance or promoted to Dunedin and light it up there.
And you throw in that if a couple of the guys at the higher
Drew
level, Hutchinson, Drew Hutchinson.
Deck McGuire, if Asher Woj's stuff comes back, Asher Wojciechowski.
And then you throw in, you've got
Ghost Marisnik and Darno at the top.
Right. You have all that. If it all comes together, it's a heck of a soup.
It's very conceivable, and that's a very fair point.
You could see the other side, which is they take a step back. Well, no, they're not going to. They could be further back next year than they are this year. But they also have the safety of numbers.
They do have a lot. They have a lot of strength in numbers. That's they're more of a depth. And again, it goes back to the depth versus star power. I do think there are potential future stars in there. But like a guy like a Ghost or a Marisnik, you're talking about a Ghost who still has contact issues. You're talking about Marisnik who is still in A ball and, low A. And so he's going to see higher level pitching. And you have so many of these pitchers we talked about who have not seen full season ball. So there's still a lot of risk in that.
That's why
they're
not ranked higher right now.
Right. But I love the depth. If you were ranking depth, prospect depth of the minor leagues, I think really the only organization that compares with them would be the Rangers.
I'll throw one other in there.
Okay.
Yeah, Padres.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I agree. The Padres would be in that mix. Good point.
To me, because the Padres, I think the Padres are truly the epitome of depth, not star power.
It's
hard to point to a whole lot of guys in the Padres. They have that you're going to say that guy will be a Hall of Fame potential, have Hall of Fame potential.
Right.
There are a whole lot of guys that you say that guy could be a productive big leaguer.
I was saying they have guys who are like in their 11 to 20 range, like Jeff Decker, and James Darnell, who you point out and say, yeah, I can see those guys being productive everyday players. They're corner bats. They're probably going to be average corner bats, not exceptionally, could be slightly above average. Like, well, you know, when you think about, like, left fielders are basically 18 home runs average last year. I can see both those guys hitting that or being a little bit better.
I'm a big Robbie Erlin, Joe Wieland fan.
Yeah, yep.
Neither of those guys, it's hard to project either of them winning a Cy Young down the road.
Right, but it's
but
also
put them
hard
in that
to
park.
Yeah,
it's hard to project them not being useful pitchers.
That's right. That's a good, and they have a lot of guys like that. And then the other thing that you like about their organization is they were aggressive in last year's draft. So they have guys like Austin Hedges. They have guys like Joe Ross. They do have upside guys. They're a little bit further away. And then the real X factor for me with their organization is Reimer Liriano. He's the guy who has that who could really jump up next year and be. And go from a really good prospect to one of the elite prospects. JJ, what else about this year's top 100 deliberations that we want to touch on? I will say we had a late entry we should talk about on the podcast with Yoenis Céspedes signing with the Oakland Athletics.
Let's make it clear. Okay.
Céspedes.
I think everyone
knows who we're talking about.
But he makes it in. He was signed in time for the top 100. Jorge Soler, not going to be on it because – But Céspedes, the thing that's tough about that is that we talked about Daisei Matsuzaka with the 2007 list.
Right.
Japanese players and Cuban players are in many ways the toughest to figure out because
that's a good point.
You're talking about much more than just how are they going to handle the competition they're facing.
Well, you don't know how they're going to handle the increased competition level, first of all, and second of all, you don't know how they're going to handle the transition to the United States culturally for Cuban players. You don't know how they're going to – I mean, Yu Darvish had money in Japan. He'll have money here. He might have more money, but he had money in Japan.
He already had scrutiny, too. Scrutinized star.
And that was not the case necessarily for Céspedes. I mean, certainly you're scrutinized if you're a baseball star in Cuba, but it's just not – it's going to be taken up a notch, although he'll be in Oakland. So it really won't be that many people noticing.
But the thing that would be interesting to see with him is that one of the things that we've seen with several Cuban players coming over is they get bigger.
Right.
And not necessarily in good ways.
Absolutely.
And with him, the key with him is that if he's a center fielder, he's more valuable than if he's a corner.
Yeah.
So he needs to – the key is – now, it's not every Cuban defector that's been the case, but there have been a number of them that's been the case. So we need to see, okay, is he going to be able to stay at the same size that he is now?
It's a legitimate concern just going on the track record of other Cuban players. Another one that's interesting to me, JJ, is – maybe this is a little bit of a sidebar, but let's talk about this A signing. What did you make of Oakland being the team that signed Yoenis Céspedes? That really shocked me. But I guess at the same time, it makes some sense that Oakland sang their windows in a couple of years. This actually gives Céspedes time to acclimate to Major League Baseball without immediate pressure of a pennant race and, say, the scrutiny that may have come if he had signed with, the Nationals.
Or the Marlins.
Right.
You know, where I think if you're – and the other thing, key thing with this is that I think could end up playing a part down the road. He doesn't have a no-trade clause.
Right.
So,
good point.
If the A's are in a situation where, okay, the window gets pushed back because he's a free agent after 4 years.
Right.
If they hit the point in year three, year four, and it's like, oh, we're not there yet. We don't have the stadium yet. Well, then they also could turn around and trade him. And if he turns out to be the player that a lot of people think he will be, $9 million a year. Not that
really below market value if he turns.
I think it actually is a little bit backloaded, so it actually may be more like 10 or 11. I don't have the contract in front of me, but that wouldn't be irrational to give. You know, that would be a decent rate to where you could trade him, and the contract's not going to be a hindrance to trading him.
I agree. I like the signing for him because of the contract flexibility, the 4 years.
I like it for the A's because he's an impact, potential impact player. The A's have not gotten their hands on potential impact offensive players.
That's why I like it for them. I like it for him from that standpoint. I understand that maybe there's a chance he could have gotten more elsewhere. I'm not necessarily buying. But I like it for Oakland. It's you're kind of giving your fans a little bit more reason to tune into your team, which all the trades they made in December, JJ, it really soured what fans were left on them.
But the other thing with that is that who offensively, I'm not talking about pitchers because they've got some interesting pitchers.
You don't have to tell me on this one.
Offensively, who were they building around before that?
I don't know.
Now we know.
Nobody.
Now we know.
Michael Choice a couple years from now.
Now we know. I mean, he's the guy who you're building around because the reality of it is that he has more offensive upside
than anyone on their team.
And not only that, but he plays a premium position while doing it.
Yeah, so I like the move for Oakland. I think it's I never understood why people thought he would get $50 million. And I guess in a way he got more money than Chapman.
You know what?
I understand
But I understand what he did, though. $36 million and free agency after 4 years.
Right, that's what I'm saying. I think that initially people thought, oh, well, we thought there were all these rumors of winter meetings, he was going to get $50 million, blah, blah, blah.
But if you got $50 million over six compared to 36 over four, I may rather have the 36 over four if you believe in yourself, because the reality is that still be in his prime or right at it.
Not far off of it. And he'll have 4 years of big league experience. And
if he's a star, he'll have at that point proven it
right
to where – he'll be a marquee free agent.
He'll be a known commodity, and he'll be young enough at age 30 to take advantage of it, where he gets a 5 or 6 year deal after that, and you can expect him to perform for most of that deal. So,
right,
and instead he'll get 10 years.
Yeah, and then the reality is he'll be an albatross around the neck of the team that signs him, and the Angels will be trying to, you know, he'll be one of their 72 outfielders in 2020. And
They'll still be paying Gary Matthews Jr. And Vernon Wells.
And Albert Pujols will, you know, the 40-year-old Albert Pujols will be playing, and, you know, that, and it'll be great.
That's not a fun scenario. That said, I do kind of like the Angels' chances this year, but yeah, 4 or 5 years from now.
Think about it. It is crazy to think, like, so when is that Albert Pujols contract in? Like, we're doing
in
this
10 years.
If we're doing this conversation in 2020.
Someone that we've never heard of will be president in 2022. And Albert Pujols will still be playing for the Los Angeles
Angels. I hope we're still doing these podcasts. You know.
I think at that time it'll just be a hologram that'll just appear in front of you at home. So, and that'll be scary. John at 50, that could be scary. So good stuff on the podcast today. Thank people for the questions. Of course, you can always send those in. We're going to get the 50,000 Twitter followers, JJ. That's our goal
I was going to say, if you are listening to this podcast and you don't follow us on Twitter,
please do.
You know, baseball, at Baseball America. You can also follow all of our individual ones, but the actual main Baseball America feed is not just, for a while there, it was just an automated feed of our links. It's not that anymore. You get links. We also will answer questions. We interact with you on that feed as well. So check that out. If you haven't liked us on Facebook,
please do.
And so again, posting every weekday. We post stuff on Facebook. We'll send links to stories as we have them.
There's been a poll there.
We'll send polls. We'll, you know, have conversations there. If you want to discuss things with us right now, I think we actually have a question. It's a couple days old now, but of which team do you think is going to have the most top 100 prospects? We got some Padres, got some Rangers guesses, got some Blue Jays guesses, you know, A's guesses. So kind of you can join in, interact with us.
We never would have had A's guesses before December.
No, that's definitely true.
But suspect A's in those trades with the Nationals definitely changed things. And then we'll have the
Diamondbacks.
The Diamondbacks, that's the one I forgot. Of course, we will have our first college podcast in season of the year. We didn't get around to scheduling one this week. We will have one on Monday. I'll be not in Durham. Aaron will be not in SoCal.
I'm already having chills.
It will happen. It will get up on Dropbox, and it'll happen.
As the PA podcast engineer.
No, it's going to happen. Don't worry. It'll happen, and it'll be good. It'll sound good. I'm taking my headset with me going on the road. So we'll have the first college podcast of the year on Monday. But if you don't have it on Monday, now you know why. It'll at the very latest happen on Tuesday. But we'll have the first of our weekly college podcasts coming next week. And we'll just keep it up. We're very excited to see when we check on iTunes. I think we're the number 3 baseball podcast out there, and we're the only
one that's
not associated with a large corporation. Although I guess we sort of are now.
But no one,
if you could tell us what Source Interlink is, let me know, because I never heard of it before December. But we're proud to be part of the Source Interlink family, and we're very proud of the fact that so many people listen to the podcast. We get a lot of positive feedback on it. Feel free to review it on iTunes, and thanks for listening, because I feel like there's a lot of on the new media front, JJ, I feel like we've done a lot of good things for Baseball America, and it feels good to interact with people who like what we do and care about it the way that we do.
And hey,
it's
this
fun.
Is, and let's be honest, it's the best part of the year. We enjoy book season, but
college baseball games.
College baseball games tomorrow. And spring training is getting going. So hey, I can't wait to be the fact that I'll be listening to spring training games before long.
I believe the word for that is phenomenal. All right. Thanks, guys, for listening. Thanks, JJ, for co-hosting the podcast and for engineering it. And thanks to you for the download. Until next week, so long, everybody.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.